today on Paul Bunyan Country Outdoors. Dick Beardsley channels his inner Adam Thielen and catches footballs. Footballs with gills. But first, Toby Kovaliva. Now, Toby and I usually talk fishing. Today, we're talking deer hunting. He was driving back from his deer hunt down in southeast Minnesota yesterday, and we had a great conversation. We'll get into it in just moments, but we want to tell you that Paul Bunyan Country Outdoors is sponsored by DS Beverages, your Anheuser-Busch distributor in Paul Bunyan Country, Bonded Lock and Key of Bemidji, your home for Liberty Safes, Timberline Sports and Convenience in Black Duck, Clearbrook Electric, Pepsi and I Bottling of Bemidji, and Ace on the Lake on Lake Bemidji's South Shore. Well, we're checking in with Toby Kovaliva. Toby, I wanted to first of all thank you for joining us once again, and secondly, find out how's that. You know, a lot of the guys I talk to are teachers when they're not guiding, and it's been a weird year. I'm just wondering how things are for you guys.
Oh, you know, it's crazy. We're in a time right now where obviously everywhere in Paul Bunyan Country, our COVID situations getting a little bit out of hand, and with us in Brainerd, school teaching wise. You know, the magical number is 50 per 10,000 to switch over to distance learning at the high school level and whatnot in middle school. And I just saw a buck running by the, we're going to talk deer hunting. I literally just had a big buck run right by the truck. We 2 weeks ago, we surpassed 50 per 10,000. And in 2 weeks' time, Brainerd is now over 100 per 10,000, and my wife's emergency room nurse, RN at the Essentia Health Center in Brainerd in the ER, and our hospital's full, and the situation isn't great because, you know, when people have emergency needs right now, or people are really sick, they're flying them out, and you know, just last week everybody was full, and so things are just a little goofy that way. You know, it's a little scary, it's alarming, but with school now, we are in distance learning from pre-kindergarten through 12th grade in Brainerd, and that means the teachers are coming to work, but the kids are not showing up. There's a few kids with special needs or whatever that do come to school, but other than that, it's sit in your office and get on a Google meeting for an hourly basis with your students. So it's a learning curve for sure. You know, we seem to have a better grasp right now than we did last year. And, you know, in the spring when we tried to do it, we were trying to just kind of learn as we're running and, you know, learning to go with it. So now we have a plan and we have a structured curriculum geared towards distance learning or e-learning, as we call it. So, it is what it is. And, you know, we hope that we can get these kids back in the classroom because ultimately they're the ones that are really missing out on that deal. You know, we can figure out a way to teach them, but the experience that goes along with the education is, you know, I have a senior in high school, and she's certainly missing out on her senior year.
Oh yeah, it's bad. It's not, and I feel terrible for those students. That's for sure. But I feel bad for teachers too. Guys like you and women who get into teaching, they get into teaching because they care about kids. They like dealing with kids, and so it's not great for you either.
No, the personal relationships. You know, the rapport you build with kids. You know, some kids, you know, need an adult figure in their life that don't have them, and they're just special. Every year there's special relationships you grow and you get, and that's the part that, as you just mentioned, that's the part that's missing. And, you know, I have a printed off list of kids with their pictures from last year, and I have, you know, about 230 kids that I see throughout the week through a computer screen if they turn on their camera, and there's zero rapport going on. We're simply giving them stuff to do and trying to touch base with ones that are having a hard time with you know, stuff online. But it's quiet in the school, and it's sad. It really is. And from high school athletics that are, you know, going to suffer through that same type of, you know, Jason and I are both coaches, and he's luckily been able to play some football, but I'm a hockey coach, so as we gear up for winter sports, that's another part of the piece of the puzzle. You know, you coach for a reason. You love playing a sport, but of course, coaching now is different. It's building character and building rapport with kids and helping them steer them in the right direction. And if we can't have that, man, it's just a sad, sad deal.
Yeah, and we're not going to get into a deep sociological discussion here, but, you know, there are kids who have involved parents, and those involved parents will keep being involved, and they'll get them through this okay. There's a lot of kids who don't have involved parents, and when they don't have that parent there to make sure they're doing what they need to do, they're going to fall further behind.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, even when you are involved as a parent, there's kids that are just, you know, it's hard for them not to have the structure. And
yep.
And you're right. As soon as they, and I see it daily, like kids, as soon as they start to slide, it's just like they jump right off a cliff when it comes to academics and school and their social life. And it's going to, the fallback from this deal is going to be, it's going to be something we're going to learn from, and hopefully we can all get better in the end. But as they say, it is what it is right now, and all we can do is put one foot in front of the other and make the best of it.
Yeah. Well, one of the positives, I think, that came out of this whole thing was, we talked about it many times over the course of spring and summer, was the there seemed to be a lot more people out fishing, a lot more families doing that. License sales were certainly up. We're seeing license sales up for hunting seasons as well. So maybe kids and family are getting out in the woods and doing some of the things that they always thought they wanted to do and never got around to. Now they're doing it, and hopefully this will be a positive going forward as we get into more fishing and hunting, and they will make that continue to be a part of their life. It certainly has been a part of yours, and you are on the way back from a big hunting season.
Yeah, well, you know, deer season is kind of the one outdoor event that's not really, as a fishing guide, as you mentioned, is kind of the one thing I don't do that's commercialized anymore, you know. As a fishing guide, I do it. Of course, I love it, and just like teaching, you know, for the same reasons. But deer season is just me, a tree, and an animal, and Mother Nature. And there's, you know, where I hunt, there's no service, there's no phone, there's really nothing but me and the birds, the chickadees, the squirrels, and hopefully once in a while a big old wily 30-pointer comes by. That's the dream. But, you know, I made a social media post on Friday night that, you know, here I am now 45 years old, and I don't even know how many years I've been hunting deer, but I still can't go to sleep at night on deer hunting eve as if I was 12 years old again. It's crazy, and that's the drug for me. And so I was fortunate enough to have some time off, you know, and it's not ideal, of course, with everything going on with school and work and professionalism, you know, as far as teaching goes. But we are allowed to take a couple of days off, and I did. So hunted through the opening weekend, and got to sit outside in t-shirt and shorts and whatever else and deer hunt with 75 degrees in southeast Minnesota is where I'm hunting. And the transition to yesterday when we had sideways sleet. We didn't get the snow where I was at, but it was cold and it was wet and it was miserable. But it was all still part of the experience, and it's awesome. I can't beat it. You know, I grew up hunting in northern Minnesota, up just north of Bemidji, Highway 89 going north, deer hunted there, and then transitioned down by Lake George. And after moving to Brainerd and meeting some people through fishing, ultimately, I ended up having an opportunity about 8 years to come to southeast Minnesota. But southeast Minnesota is a different deal. You know, I was driving from Brainerd south through the cities, like, nobody's on the road, and there's traffic jam going north, leaving the cities, and everybody's pulling a deer stand and a camper and a four-wheeler, and I'm like, what am I doing wrong here? I'm going the absolute wrong direction, apparently. But when you get south of the cities, it turns into rolling hills, and down by the Mississippi River, south of Red Wing, the Winona, and south of that actually is where I hunt, and it's just bluffs and beautiful oak, you know, ravines and funnels and cornfields and bean fields and just a deer hunter. It's basically, it's Iowa is what it is. And, you know, topography wise, it's the same as Iowa. And lucky enough to have a farmer family. And then I get to go down and hunt for a few days. And they come up and see me in the summer, and I take them fishing. And it's a nice little trade out. And, you know, down here, you can use a muzzleloader or a shotgun. That's pretty much it. So you can't shoot, you know, much more than 100 yards. So the deer just get a chance to get bigger, and when I say bigger, you know, they make it past 2.5 years old, which is a lot of the deer that are shot in northern Minnesota. The deer count in northern Minnesota in some places, you know, phenomenal still, and other places down a little bit. But down here, there's quite a few deer, but with a limited capability with a firearm, and the fact that up until just a year ago, there was antler point restrictions, so a deer had to have 4 points on its side. You put those two together, and they get a little bit bigger, so... you know, I think I saw 5 bucks in the last few days, and they were all over 8 points, and maybe even more than that. and was fortunate enough to shoot a seven-pointer, four on one side and three on the other. Nice. But it was one of the bigger deer I've ever shot. It was a big old mature one, and a seven-point deer in northern Minnesota is kind of typical that we'll have about a 10-inch wide little rack, and those get shot. And this one I shot had almost 20 inches wide and like 10-inch tines on it, but it was only 7 points. So it's just crazy, and it's an experience I love every year. And I transition from fall fishing to get a little window where I don't do a whole lot of anything besides, you know, kind of hang out and take care of school starts. And then I start thinking about deer hunting and start watching the YouTubes and Outdoor Channel and get all fired up, and then I get to go spend 5 days. And now it's time to hopefully get the skates out, sharpen them up, and brush off the goalie coaching book and get back to work.
Oh, yeah, that's coming up very soon. So you mentioned some of the things you like about it. The deer get a little bit bigger. Obviously, they have a lot to eat. It's farm country down there.
Yep.
And you mentioned the topography being different. Do you find that entertaining simply because it is so different from where we live?
It is, in a sense that you get to see more deer, Kevin. You know, not that there's more deer, which there probably is a little bit in the spot that I'm hunting compared to where I used to hunt, but, you know, it's just so many, the vast open fields. So you may not have a prayer at shooting one of the deer you see, but if you can see across a 150-acre field, and there's, you know, 20 deer out there scattered all over the place, it's just entertaining. You're not just staring at a red squirrel in a pine tree all day until the one comes by at 40 yards. You're literally, you know, you're sitting and you have options. You can hunt in the woods, you can hunt on the field, and it's the state land down here is the same way. So it's just, it looks different, and it's quite honestly, it's a little bit warmer most of the time as you get older. You know, it's just beautiful down here. And again, the number one factor is the groceries. You know, they're agricultural fed, so they have corn and beans and acorns, and they're just really tasty critters. So that's the number one deal. I know when I left the house, we had been out of venison since about February last year. So my goal was to get a couple, and you can shoot a couple down here. So I now have three deer, and we should be good through the 2021 season.
So yeah,
it's just phenomenal. And the deer are not as pressured on private property. And you know, I got to hunt. Actually, the deer I shot, I used a decoy. I put a decoy out in the morning and sitting in the ground blind, and I heard a deer across the way on a ridge grunting, and I just hit my call a couple times, and he came flying out of the woods from 100 yards away to about 30 yards, and I would have had a hard time missing that one. It was just textbook. It's like if you ever watch a hunting show for deer, and they have these big animals that come out, you know, and it's the sunrise behind, and it's picture perfect. Well, that was the memory I got to have this year, and
nice.
For that I'll be ever grateful. And that's the drug that I wait for all year long, right there.
So for a lot of guys, it is simply about the hunt, but you actually are a big venison fan as well.
Oh, absolutely. And so, you know, we pretty much all the burger that we use for, you know, your tacos and spaghetti and everything like that, I typically have a deer or two made into hamburger. I seem to be the only one that enjoys the steaks in my house, so I don't have as many of those. And then I typically make a deer into beef sticks that get to come along with people that jump in the boat with me in the summer. So those get eaten up pretty fast, you know, if you took a pack of beef sticks every day. So, yeah, so I definitely love it, and it's, you know, it's healthy, and it's lean. It's a lean red meat, and for me, there's a million ways to make it, but I like to grill them, and I like to eat the burgers, the burger meat in all my spaghetti sauce. That's kind of a key. I kind of don't like spaghetti unless it's got a venison burger in it.
Okay.
So we make a lot of spaghetti in my house.
So you're in southeast Minnesota. That is an area that, at least some parts of it, that have been key to CWD. What about where you're hunting?
Yeah, we haven't. You know, the closest animal that was tested positive is about 15 miles. Here there's not a whole lot of testing going on. It's all volunteer only because of Corona.
Right.
And so, you know, I don't know what the numbers will show for this year, but in the last year, you know, there was a dozen or so deer that were found in the area closest to, you know, east of Houston, Minnesota, which is kind of a hotbed for it. The closest was whatever it was, like, I think the farmer that I was chatting with, he said like 10 miles away there was one. So nothing immediately in the area. You know, they obviously it's a real thing, you know, and so I, in Brainerd, they have it too. So it's not too far south of Bemidji. There's a CWD zone there too. And you know, you take them in, you get them tested. I did have a deer that I shot with an archery, in archery season at, up by Brainerd this year. And I took it and had it tested, and I'm still awaiting the results. So I'm not in a hurry, and I'll do the same with these deer that I got down here. And I'm in no hurry. I mean, I'll get it processed and whatever, and I'm 99% sure that they'll be fine. You know, they're very healthy deer, but sometimes they have it, they don't know. And, of course, there is no science behind the fact that it transfers to humans. So, you know,
right.
I'm comfortable with it, but we'll wait. We'll get them tested and we'll see what happens. But I have three different deer, and I'm sure hoping that they're fine. But, you know, I haven't seen it direct hand. I haven't seen a lot of deer numbers dying down there and falling. And some say it's been there all along. It's just now they're testing it more. So, of course, you're going to find it. You know, kind of the same small seagull story of how we've transitioned with COVID. You know, it's just, at first it's not a big deal. Then they start testing more, then you find more.
Mm-hmm.
And then here we are. And they do seem to have, you know, there's a method to the madness now, and people seem to be recovering from it, but it's still prevalent, you know? So It's the same with CWD.
So what does Toby prefer? Deer hunting or fishing? We'll pose that question later on. Up next, though, we check in with Dick Beardsley, fresh off a fishing trip in South Dakota. And now, getting ready for ice fishing. This is Paul Bunyan Country Outdoors. Country Outdoors, bringing in one of our good friends, Dick Beardsley of Dick Beardsley Guide Service. Dick, welcome back to the show.
Hey, Kev, great to be with you again. Man, here we are, mid-November, and I'm starting to get geared up for the ice fishing season now. In fact, I just dropped my boat off this morning to get winterized, which is always a sad day, but I'll be sad for today, and then tomorrow I'll start getting fired up for the ice fishing season coming up.
Well, it's definitely going to start coming up, that's for sure. Do you do any hunting, Dick?
You know, I used to, Kev. I used to deer hunt, but I haven't in many years. I still like to get out and walk through the woods a little bit, grouse hunting and stuff, but I pretty much just keep fishing until I can't get the boat in the water anymore the fall.
You know, there's a number of guys like that, and it's probably in a way kind of cool because you sure have some great fisheries to yourself at a time of year when the bite is really excellent.
Oh, you really do, Kev. You know, I was out in South Dakota last week out on Lake Francis Case. I was out there sprucing up my son's grave for Veterans Day and the upcoming holidays, and I always bring my boat out there, and it was 4 days in the 70s and no wind, which is unheard of out there, and the walleye bite and the smallmouth bass bite it's the best I've ever seen it, and I've been going out there for, gosh, 40 plus years. But before I left, I was still doing guide trips up until about, oh, that third week in October here around the Bemidji area, and I'll tell you, Kev, the walleye bite this past fall on a lot of the lakes, including Lake Bemidji, was really, really good. It was really a lot of fun.
What were they doing on the lakes?
Well, you know me, I love jig fishing, and in the fall, that jig bite, it was really good. And I tell you, Kev, we were catching most of our fish. We're in that 12 to 14 foot zone, just fishing off some of the offshore breaks and kind of along some of the still emerging weed lines. But actually, we were catching more fish. They weren't sitting right up on the edge, or you know, a little bit out of ways from some of the weed edges on the area lakes. But basically, I call it long line jigging. What we would do is either use the wind if there was some wind to drift along a certain depth, or we'd use the trolling motor to kind of keep us at that depth. And then you know, you cast your jig out, and then you use the wind or your trolling motor with your boat. And we were just kind of dragging and popping that jig. And then when you'd catch a fish, I'd hit the anchor mode on my trolling motor, and we'd sit there and then pitch jigs and usually pick up a few more. But, I mean, it was, the bite here this fall was really, really good. Now, October was a cold October, and I'm telling you, those last few trips I had, I had the little heater in the boat just to kind of, you know, try to warm up your hands, you know, when they get wet from handling the fish or handling minnows, things like that. But I hope folks had a chance to get out there and enjoy the fall bite because it was really good.
Well, talk a little bit about your trip to South Dakota. You do that every year. But this year, it wasn't a typical November trip to South Dakota.
No, Kev, it wasn't. It was, you know, I was kind of watching the calendar. I tried to get out there before Veterans Day, sometime early November, and I just happened to hit it right. I had 4 days where the temperatures were in the mid-70s, and there wasn't any wind. And when I say any wind, it was the Lake Francis Case, the Missouri River system out there, was like glass. And to see it like that out there for one day, let alone 4 days in a row. And Kev, the walleye bite and the smallmouth bass bite was off the charts. I mean, I've been going out there for 40-plus years, and it was unbelievable. And those fish were all in that 10 to 14-foot range. And when you find a school of them, you could just sit on top of them. And Kev, the last day I was out there, and I'm not saying this to try to sound like I'm some great fisherman or anything like that. I just happened to be in the right place at the right time. But the last spot I was on, I sat there for almost 2 hours, and I caught a fish or got bit literally on every single cast. That day, I know I caught well over 100 walleyes. And these things are like footballs. And Kev, honestly, it was the best one day of walleye fishing I've ever had anywhere in my life. It was just crazy good.
What a special day.
It really was. And, you know, that last day I had a couple guide trips out there a couple days before. And then that last day, you know, it was just me and I could feel my son Andy's presence in the boat with me. We used to fish out there quite a bit when we'd go out there to visit his grandma and grandpa. And it was just, and there was nobody else out there on the lake. You're going to start making me cry now. It was one of the most glorious days I've ever had in my life. It was really something. It was very special.
Wow. But 4 days of temperatures in the 70s in the Dakotas with no wind, that is pretty amazing in its own right.
Oh, I'm telling you, Kev. Like I said, I've been going out there for 40-plus years, and I wasn't out there in November last fall because I just had back surgery. But the fall before, I was out there about the same time, and the last day I was out there that day, it was 28 degrees, and I had about a half a foot of snow in my boat. I was freezing my hinder off. So, no, it was to get 4 days like that out there again is probably not going to happen again in my lifetime, I don't think.
Well, you are a guide in Paul Bunyan country. Paul Bunyan country, I think we can arguably say, is the walleye capital of the world. Some might even argue it might be the bass capital of the world, too. There might be a little bit of a fight at that one, but there's a case to be made for that. That being said, you do make it your way out into the South Dakota area a couple times a year, and I know there's plenty of people who live in our neck of the woods that still go to western North Dakota or western South Dakota to do some fishing. So what is it about that area that is so appealing?
Well, part of it is they have no closed season. So I know in the springtime, this past spring, I was out there, gosh, probably 4 or 5 times before our season even opened. And the fishery out there on Lake Francis Case, which runs basically from Chamberlain, South Dakota, all the way south to where the dam is in a little town called Pickstown. And it's about 130 miles long reservoir. And the amount of fish in that lake and the amount of food that's in that lake, it's absolutely amazing. And it's so different than around here, Kev. You know, here I love the forests, and we all do that live in and partake in outdoor activities around here. But out there, you're in these it's wide open, and there's something very beautiful about that also. And also what's different is, you know me, I like to fish a lot of the weed edges for just about every species around here. Well, out there, there's really no weeds in Lake Francis Case. It's all gravel and chunk rock and a little bit of mud once in a while. So it's completely different type of fishing. And, you know, it's fun to be able to go out and fish a little bit differently than I do back here. But as much as I love going out there, you know, this is home for me. I love coming back home here. And now I'm getting excited for the upcoming ice fishing season, which hopefully is right around the corner.
So, and we're going to get into that in just a second, but I do want to talk a little bit more about that difference in fishing style. What are some of the things you have to do in a South Dakota reservoir or body of water that makes it different than fishing here? You mentioned no weeds to follow around. What else?
Yeah, so out there, a lot of people concentrate on the river channel, and you can see it on your locator. I mean, you'll be in, you know, 20, 30 foot of water, and all of a sudden, it'll drop down to over 100 feet. And so in the summertime, Kev, a lot of those fish relate to that edge. So you'll catch a lot of fish out there in that 30 to 40 foot range. And what I found out years ago out there, that in the summertime, most everybody pulls bottom bouncers and spinners with night crawlers. I mean, I would say 99% of the people. Now, I've been out there in the summertime, and I always, you know, try to get a jig bite going. And, you know, you will catch some on a jig. In the spring especially, you'll catch them. That's where most people do it, and then late in the fall. But for the majority of the year, people out there pull bottom bouncers and spinners, or they'll pull plugs too. And night crawlers are the big ticket out there in the summertime. And again, you just, you know, earlier in the year, they're going to be up shallower. As the summer progresses, they're going to be hanging out more on the edge of the river channel and where the water drops off quite deep. And you just follow that with your locator and your mapping system on your graph. And, you know, you'll do pretty darn good out there. And the smallmouth bass fishing, too, is just crazy good out there. So you can really have a good opportunity. But out there, Kev, it's funny. You know, we cherish our smallmouth bass around here, at least most people do. Out there, they don't like them. The guides out there, they keep a lot of those fish. You'll see them in pictures hanging on a stringer and stuff like that. And, yeah, the guides out there, they think that it disrupts the walleye fishing and is detrimental to them, which I disagree with them on that point, but that's a whole nother argument.
All right, so we are going to get some ice fishing in here probably, you know, fairly soon. The temperature's definitely dropping again. Doesn't look like it's going to get real warm again. We had a bit of a disappointing season last year. Great start. Big snowfalls kind of ruined things for a good chunk of winter. Then towards the end of the ice fishing season, we were able to get out there some and had a lot of success as well. So provided weather-wise it's okay, we can get out there, what can we expect during the ice fishing season?
Well, I tell you, Kev, that you're right. You know, I couldn't even get my wheelhouses out onto Lake Bemidji until the first week in February just because of, you know, like you mentioned, all the snow and the slush and whatnot. So, yeah, you know, here's what we're hoping for. Some cold weather coming up. We get really nice to get a nice 8 to 12 inches of ice before we got any real heavy snow. And then I think if we can do that, hopefully we'll be able to get out there and get the wheelhouses and the skid houses out there and still use portables, obviously. I use those a lot, too. And but I, you know, I think if anything like the fall was, I think we should be in for a good season. And I think what we're going to see too, Kev, if it was anything like the summertime, I think we're going to see probably a lot more folks out there giving the sport a try with the COVID still going rampantly all over the country, and especially here in Minnesota. I think people are going to be looking for things to do. They can do it outside. And so I think we're going to see more people out there giving a shot. And if any indication is from the inquiries and bookings I'm getting for ice house rentals on Lake Bemidji, that's kind of the way it seems to be looking right now. So, you know, it's always hard for me when I winterize my boat and put it away for the season, and I'm kind of a little bit disappointed for a day. But come tomorrow, man, I'm already starting to get fired up to get ready for the ice fishing season. And that's what I'm doing. I'm getting my houses all ready to go and the ice rods and reels all set, and I'm looking forward to it.
You know, one of the things that has happened the last few years during ice fishing season is The wheelhouses have become very, very, very popular. The pressure on lakes, I know Red Lake for certain, and I think a lot of lakes, is actually increased in winter over a softwater season. There's more people out there. They're catching more fish. There's more pressure on the water. They had to put a special reg on Red Lake starting November 1st, 4 to 3 fish because of that. Do you have any long-term concerns about the pressure on the lakes due to increased ice fishing?
I do, Kev, especially with the panfish and especially the crappies. You know, the crappies tend to school up big time in some of those deep water basins, and they basically sit there all year, and they can, I tell you, they can become easy pickings. And, you know, the one thing which is nice in the wintertime is that every lake is accessible. Even if you don't have a snowmobile or can't drive a vehicle out there, if you've got two legs, you can walk out there, pull a portable, or just have a bucket and fish. And it's easy to see where people are catching fish because, you know, there's going to be a few fish houses on a particular spot. So that does concern me. I mean, I like the fact that more people are getting out, but I, I really would like to see them drop the limits on panfish in the wintertime, everything, perch, crappies, bluegills, and even maybe look at having even a closed season for a little bit in the springtime like we do on the walleyes and the pike and bass and the game fish, just to give those, you know, fish. I mean, I know they lay a lot of eggs, the panfish do, and we've got a lot of fish, but, you know, with the increased pressure, I'm just a big proponent for, you know, really erring on the side of maybe taking too few fish you're able to keep than to keep too many. So we'll see what happens with that. But yeah, it does concern me a bit because there definitely is more pressure out there on the area lakes in the wintertime. And a lot of that is because of it's so comfortable now to fish out in these wheelhouses. It's like fishing in your living room in your home. It's that comfortable out there.
You know, it can be a double-edged sword. I think it's really important that more and more people are experiencing ice fishing. You know, like you mentioned, because of comfort, maybe people who would never do it otherwise are. And I think that's important for the future of the sport. At the same time, it does put additional pressure on.
Yeah, it definitely does. And it is good for the sport. And see especially younger people getting involved in the sport. And hopefully that'll continue on. And I think, you know, and sometimes we have to put limits on ourselves. And I know when I take folks out, especially if it's on a small lake in the wintertime, you know, if the, you know, crappie limit's 10, I'll say, well, you know, you can keep 5. Well, yeah, but we can keep 10. Yeah, you can keep 10 legally, but when you're out here with me today, you can keep 5. And if there's 4 or 5 of them, you know, in the group with me, you know, that's more than enough fish to clean and have a nice fish fry. And when you explain to people why you're doing that, 99.9% of the people are really good about that. And so, you know, even though we've got certain limits on the fish, that doesn't mean that you need to take a limit every time you're out there. So that's something for folks to think about also.
Okay. Yeah, and typically it is those smaller lakes that are going to freeze up first. And there's a lot of I think a lot of excitement and a lot of fun in the challenge. You've mentioned it before of being a hardcore outdoorsman and hauling your stuff through the woods and, you know, getting out on the water. You're not just rolling up and taking the truck out to the middle of the lake.
No, that's right, Kev. You know, I remember last winter we all had snow, and I was on a little lake way back in the woods. I had to snowshoe about a mile and a half, maybe almost 2 miles back to this little lake through the deep snow. I got out there and it was just me. It was a small little lake. I drilled a bunch of holes. I was out there for about 6 hours, and Kev, I never caught a fish. But I got home that night. I told my wife, Jill, I said, "Hun, that was one of the most enjoyable times I've ever had ice fishing in my life." And I didn't catch a fish. Just that, the part of that, of slapping on the snowshoes and dragging the little portable behind me through the deep snow and getting out there on the lake, and it was well below zero, but there wasn't a breath of wind. The sun was out. I didn't hear any vehicles, any cars. All I could hear were some bald eagles screeching that were sitting up in the trees, and it was just an incredible day out there. So, you know, I encourage people to get out, and, you know, if you catch a few fish, great, but enjoy the time spent out there in the great outdoors, because we have so many opportunities here in the Bemidji area. We don't know how fortunate and blessed we are.
Absolutely true, yeah. Hey, just advice for those who are going to go out ice fishing. Give us some safety tips. I mean, what do we need to bring with us, number one? And number two, how thick should the ice be before you even take it seriously? There's no such thing as 100% safe ice, but how thick is it before you say, okay, I'm ready to go?
Yeah, Kev, when I was 40 years ago, you know, I'd be out there on 2 inches of ice, which is crazy. You know, I would have a life jacket on, but now, you know, about if you've got 4 inches of good, solid ice, you know, that's plenty good for to walk on for sure. But especially that first ice, you know, make sure you have an ice chisel with you, and that every step you take that chisel and give it a couple of whacks into the ice just to make sure. Another thing is the ice picks. You can buy them at the local bait shop and sporting goods stores, and they're on a cord that goes around your neck, and they've got two handles and like a couple of nails, almost is what it looks like, stuck in the end, so that if you would happen to go through the ice, you can stick those into the good ice and pull yourself up out of the ice. They're very inexpensive, and they can save your life. Another thing, too, is if it is early in the season, throw a life jacket on or buy a suit. I've got a suit that it's a floater suit, and both the bibs and the jacket, so that if I would happen to go through the ice and get into that water, I'll actually float. So, you know, they're a little expensive, but they're well worth if they're going to save your life. So, and just use extreme caution, and especially early in the season, you know, don't wander out onto some lake that's out in the middle of the woods all by yourself. Make sure you go out with somebody, have some rope with you just in case that, you know, if somebody does go through, you've got somebody there to help you get you on out. And if you follow just some really, you know, easy advice and just, you know, don't get overconfident in the ice, you know, you'll have a safe ice fishing season, and everybody will have a good time.
Absolutely. So, Dick, do you just rent the houses, or do you actually do ice fishing trips as well?
No, I do the trips too, Kev. Yeah, I've got some wheelhouses I put out on Lake Bemidji, and I rent those out. Sometimes I'll even use them on guide trips, and I've got portables that we'll pull out onto some of the area lakes, and they're very comfortable. I mean, my houses, the portables that I have, they're all got the double insulation in them, and boy, when you get them set up, which happens right away, you pop a couple of holes. I put a Mr. Buddy heater in there, and they are as comfortable and warm as can be. So, no, I do both. And like I said, Kev, I'm looking forward to the season. It's right around the corner.
How do we get lined up if we want to either rent a house or take a trip with you?
Yeah, you bet, Kev. They can give me a call at 218-556-7172, or they can send me an email at real simple, dick@dickbeardsley.com. And you can go to my website, too, dickbeardsleyfishingguide.com.
Dick Beardsley, good friend of the show. Getting excited for ice fishing season. I think a lot of guys are as well. Dick, thank you so much for your time today, and good luck when you get a chance to get out there.
All right, thanks, Kev. Always a pleasure to be on with you, and good luck, everybody. Stay safe.
This is Paul Bunyan Country Outdoors. Checking back in now with Toby Cavalli-Vogg. Fresh off his deer hunting excursion. You know, when I was doing play-by-play covering you and all the lumberjack athletes of the 90s, a lot of people would ask me what I liked best, you know, what sport I liked to call best. And there really wasn't one I liked best, but there were certain things I liked about each. You know, this one provided this opportunity. This one gave me this. What about you? If I were to say fishing or hunting, do you have a favorite or do they each bring a different kind of joy to you?
I would say they both definitely bring joy. And, you know, as you age, everything changes from your taste buds to what you enjoy the most. And for me, there's no question that personally, my short deer season is by far my favorite, because I spend the whole year waiting for 5 days.
Yeah.
Now, fishing is spread out so far, you know, throughout the year.
that, you know, there's different times. So, you know, coming to Bemidji and fishing that tournament with my dad, well, that's a highlight that I look forward to, similar to deer hunting. So the night before, I'm not as wound up as he is because I've done a lot of them, but, you know, that's special. So fishing season in general, you know, and I get the peak periods when I know the fishing is really, really good. I'm excited to get people out. I have people that rebook the same example, the July full moon, come up musky fish. And, you know, this year we got 5 muskies and 1 guide trip, you know, and it was crazy. Well, you can't beat that for excitement, you know, and that was a lot of fun. And so there's peaks and valleys throughout fishing season. So it's kind of spread out. I love that, of course, as well. But when you get, your loud vehicle going by.
It's all right.
When you get such a, something you have such a passion for that's such a small window of opportunity, you know, it's like Christmas every year when you're a kid, you know. Birthdays are great. You go to birthday parties or family functions, but when you know Santa Claus is coming tomorrow, it's pretty easy to get excited.
Yeah.
That's kind of my deer season. And so for that purpose, I would say deer season would probably be my favorite because it's more personal and it's special. And it's just kind of, like I said, it's just me and a tree and not much else going on.
You know, in this world, I just was talking to somebody who told me the attention span of the average person now is down to 7 seconds because of all the social media and all the things that grab our attention. To be able to sit out in the woods and not have any of that and be able to be entertained, that's like old school, baby.
It is. And you're right. It's hard. You know, I was just, I stay with a friend who hunts with a different group of people and they have a beautiful property that they get to hunt, and they see deer all the time. There was a youngster in the group who was about 16 years old who was really frustrated after 3 days that he just wasn't seeing any deer, and he was positive. There's just the deer numbers are down where they hunt, and wasn't going to be any good. And his father had to remind him, you know, if you put your phone down for a minute and actually look at some of the woods around you, you might actually see a deer. So that's something to be said for that. So, yeah, for me, it's so quiet, and you don't have a choice for you. Like where I hunted the last couple of days, there is no service. So if I wanted to get service, I would have to get out of my little hut and walk up a hill that's at about a 45-degree angle straight up the hill about half mile to get service. So I wasn't going to do that. I just figured I'd shut it off and maybe even take a nap instead of getting on my phone.
Nice.
There's plenty of things to think about and just life and everything that's going on. You know, it's pretty cool to be able to sit there and just listen to nothing.
Oh, yeah.
I actually saw a tree fall over in the woods by itself yesterday, and it answered the age-old question. They absolutely do make noise when a tree falls.
Okay. Oh, not awesome. Well, before we wrap it up, let's talk a little fishing. I know you haven't been out fishing much yourself lately with school and deer hunting and all things that are going on. Now you're getting ready to coach. But typically, this is a pretty good time to get out on the water if you can, pretty much for everything, but certainly for one of your favorite fish, the muskie.
Yeah, you know, people are all fired up about it, and guys are breaking ice at landings to get out on their favorite lakes. And, you know, Leech Lake, where I do fish a lot, is no different, and there'll be people, until it freezes up, there'll be people chiseling with, you know, going to the ice landings with sand, going to the boat landings with sand, make sure that they can get back off the water at the end, and sprinkle the landings, the cement with sand, and then chip with ice pick, ice off the landings, then get their boats in. And the reason they do is because the musky fishing is so good at this time of year because the numbers of fish concentrate in certain areas where the two will be spawning, and you can really have a fun day where you see a lot of fish. People that maybe don't like to cast all year long will use live baits and suckers, and then people also can cast with big rubber baits that replicate dying Cisco or tuopi, it's a really good time to get out. Something I've actually only done once or twice. I've not caught a muskie this late in the year, but Kim Hansky, one of our guides, does, and this is the biggest. The fish are also the biggest of the year. You know, they're really fattening up right now for winter. Plus, they got, you know, the females are starting to develop their eggs, so they got a little extra weight there, and it's truly, truly, truly the giant time of the year to catch a muskie. And so guys are just as crazy as I am about shooting a deer.
when it comes to muskies, and they get out there and they do it. And Leech Lake is a great place. There's a ton of whitefish, tuapies in that lake, and so when they're spawning, they load up pretty good. Of course, there's a huge population of muskies, so it's a popular destination. And because it's a Walker Bay per se is a big enough, deep enough, cold enough water in the summer, but that's also one of the last places to freeze up, so people can get onto the Leech Lakes of the world, lakes like that are deep and cold and fish them pretty late in the year. So there'll be guys that'll fish muskies right up to December if they can, or whenever the end of the season is. So, it's kind of crazy, I think, but they do.
They do, I know. Yeah, everybody's got their passions. But you know what? It's not just muskies. It's also a great time to catch maybe the biggest walleye you've ever caught, too.
Well, it goes with all species, you know. They are starting to retain eggs, like I mentioned. I mean, even back in September, I was cleaning fish that had eggs in them, you know, that are developing, and fish are getting fat, and they congregate. That's why they say, you know, early ice season is the best for walleye or whatever the species may be. They get a little break, or maybe they're not pressured, but they do congregate in certain areas, and they kind of school up again. And last water is kind of like the same. I mean, it's literally a day or two apart from first ice, so... You know, those deeper water transition areas, a lot of times I find, you know, the early ice spots are those spots where it goes from a hard bottom to a soft transition area. Maybe there's some bugs down there and the bait and the small perch that they forage on or down in that area. And it's really no different. Leech Lake was a fantastic walleye fishery all year again. And this fall, it was phenomenal. Not that many people were out there later in October. I know Chuck Hassey did some trips, and it was very, very fast and furious. And some big fish as well. And, you know, from September on, those big ones get pretty predictable on some of those spots on all of our lakes. But in Leeches, of course, because it just does have big fish, the biggest fish of the year are caught. It's because, they're binge feeding, like everything else, for winter, and they're also retaining some weight from eggs. So it's a great time to practice catch and release.
Well, I know, like we were saying earlier, you're a coach and teacher, so you're really busy this time of year, and certainly with hockey coming. Do you get out and get any ice fishing in at all?
I'm pretty much allergic to ice fishing. If I drill a hole on the ice that I'm on, the Zamboni driver will get awfully mad at me. So I had about 5-year window where I did get into ice fishing when we started Leisure Outdoor Adventures. We had some rentals that we ran on Leech Lake out of Chasing the Lake Resort, and I was kind of heavily involved in making sure that those were put on the right spots on weekends, and then cleaned and porta potties emptied and breaking them out of the ice on a weekly basis when they get warm in that slush and then they freeze in, and going through that and beating up my truck. And I tell you, after a few years of that, I was like, I'm good with this. I can just back to coaching hockey and be calling good. So I fish, but when I ice fish, it's late season and it's crappie fishing and it's playing a video game with electronics, and I'm sitting in a t-shirt and pants and don't even have to bring an auger because somebody drilled a hole the day before and it didn't freeze yet. So that's the ice fishing I do. I guess the lazy man's ice fishing, but actually it's really good. It's not lazy at all because you're hole hopping. But I just, you know, back to that, we were talking about deer hunting. It's opposite. Like, I can't sit in a fish house and stare at one hole. I just can't. And it's probably because of my summer guiding and fishing that I'm so aggressive fishing. I cannot sit still and wait for the fish. I can sit still and wait for a deer, but not a walleye.
Interesting.
Yeah, isn't that a little bit different?
Your description of how you like to ice fish is very similar to my description of how I would like to ice fish. I prefer the nice, relaxed, warm house ice fishing for sure. I'm no bro bros doll.
No, and more power to them. And that's a passion, right? To each their own. And the guys that do it, Jeff Anderson's the same way. He's crazy about ice fishing. For me, I'd rather go down to Florida and maybe catch some red snapper or whatever, not red snapper, redfish.
Yep.
You know, and if I can't cast to it and jig it a couple times and get in the bite, I just soon pass.
All right. Hey, great talking to you, Toby. Congratulations on getting your deer. I hope things settle down in Brainerd for both your wife and you and the community in general. Heck, I hope the whole United States and world settles down pretty soon. But in the meantime, take care of yourself, and good luck if you do get out there and get any ice fishing in.
Well, thank you, Kevin. It's always a pleasure. And you too, and everybody that's listening, you know, get outside. It's the safest place to be, you know, social distancing and outside in fresh air, and enjoy Mother Nature. It is truly one of the benefits of being in northern Minnesota.
Hey, if people are booking for next year already and want to use you for a guide, how do they do that?
I'm just looking at some email. I had like 34 emails when I got back to my phone here this morning, and two of them were people looking to book. And the best way to do that is to go online and look up Leisure Outdoor Adventures, which is www.leisureoutdooradventures.com. We have an 800 number. It's 855-LOA for Leisure Outdoor Adventures, LOA Hook, H-O-O-K. So 855-LOA Hook. That'll get you to our booking line too. So either way would be great, and I would look forward to meeting and seeing any of my old Paul Bunyan Country friends out in the water.
All right, Toby. Thanks very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Kev.
My thanks to Toby and to Dick for stopping by today. That's it for this week. We'll do it all again next week on Paul Bunyan Country Outdoors. Sponsored by Timberline Sport and Convenience in Black Duck, Bonded Lock and Key, your home for Liberty Safes in Bemidji, DS Beverages, Anheuser-Busch Distributors for Paul Bunyan Country, Ace on the Lake on Lake Bemidji's South Shore, Pepsi and I Bottling of Bemidji, and Clearbrook Electric.
At Rural First, we're the leader in rural construction loans because we don't work here. We work out here. We live rural, which means we know just what you need to build rural. Our dedicated team of loan specialists works with you throughout the construction process. And with our digital tool, you can manage your project all in one place. That's how Rural First gets you closer to what matters. Rural First is a registered trademark of Farm Credit Mid-America. NMLS 407249. Equal housing lender. Loan subject to approval and eligibility. Other terms and conditions may apply. Visit ruralfirst.com for more details.
Welcome to another round of Boardroom or Miro Board. Today we talk retrospectives with Agile coach Maria. Let's go. First question. You've spent 2 hours in a team retro, but the only input you've heard is Dave's. Boardroom or Miro Board?
Boardroom. In Miro, Dave can't hog the space because everyone can add thoughts anonymously, online, at the same time.
Correct. Next. You need the team to act on feedback fast, so you turn all those retro notes into Jira tasks instantly.
Miro all the way. And I can assign those tasks to teammates.
You're nailing this. Now, you see hundreds of sticky notes from the retro. A real mess. But you organize them into 5 themes in just seconds.
Miro, I basically get back an entire hour when I use its AI tools for clustering.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people running actually enjoyable and actionable retros in Miro. Get your first 3 boards free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.